Hello and welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. This is me, Robert Pratton, and you can find me online as on Twitter as Rob Pratton. And with me today, I've got Charles Palmer and Andy Petrowski, and these are authors of a book called Alternate Reality Games, Gamification for Performance. Hello, guys. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, Robert.
Hi. So, I want to spend the podcast really talking about the book and talking about the conclusions and some of the case studies that you've got in there. But why don't you just introduce yourselves to the audience and tell us how you came to be working together and how you got into this area of alternate reality games for sort of learning and development.
Sure. Hi, everyone. Again, I'm Andy Petrowski. I'm a senior new product development consultant at Harrisburg University, and gotten into alternate reality games really by being a generalist in the instructional design and educational technology field. So I've worked in the field for 19 years, including 7 years as director and assistant professor of learning technologies at Harrisburg University, where Charles and I worked very closely together on a number of immersive learning, immersive media, and transmedia projects. And we wrote the book to share our experiences and knowledge about alternate reality games and game design with the corporate learning world, and for them to consider alternate reality games as an option for traditional and often less immersive training solutions. We see a lot of conversations in the corporate training world around gamification and games, and often these things tend to, especially for folks that are just getting started, tend to really just take the form of multiple choice quizzes, just a little different with some extra sparkle and graphics and those types of things. So our work together designing ARGs and teaching a graduate course in serious game design was kind of the catalyst for us gathering our thoughts and our practices and putting them into this book.
Do you want to add to that, Charles?
Sure. I'm Charles Palmer, also from Harrisburg University, and I am actually the executive director for our Center of Advanced Entertainment and Learning Technologies. And as Andy mentioned, we've sort of worked together for a number of years, 8 years or so now in this field. I like to think of it where Andy focuses on the brain science and the learning technologies. I'm on the other side of the spectrum with the IT and the technical know-how, as well as the entertainment design and media content creation. So that's sort of brought us both together. As you mentioned, we sort of co-taught a course together, and that was really the foundation for a lot of these ideas in our sort of sticking our toe in the ARC world.
So I think there's probably at least half of our listeners will be familiar with the concept of alternate reality games, but the likelihood is any sort of corporate types listening might be less familiar. Do you want to give us a definition of what you're, you know, referring to when you talk about an alternate reality game in the context of learning and development?
So in a lot of cases, the idea of using alternate reality games in businesses is a little foreign, and that's mostly because, you know, one of the most common examples we see are sort of employee onboarding or learning new skills, and that tends to be done in the very tried and true method of death by PowerPoint or having someone saddle up to a mentor in the company and essentially taking someone away from their day-to-day responsibilities and having them train someone else. And what we've seen, or what we're attempting to do with alternate reality games, is to create a true experience for the individual where they can go and learn the knowledge on their own, where they can engage in not only the business practices but also the culture of a company and become a very self-sufficient member of that particular company and team. So we see these as an approach for using things like storytelling as a way of helping someone understand either their role or, as I said, the culture of the company or the responsibilities of the company itself into the task that they need to complete.
And what type of experience are we talking about? Is it like scenario-based? Is it like problem-oriented learning? Does it take place in a classroom over a number of weeks? What's the kind of format for these things?
Robert, that's one of the things that we definitely tackle in the book is some of the different formats that ARGs can take, and that's one of the reasons that they're somewhat difficult to describe, and that one ARG is not like another, because they are transmedia. They take place in various platforms and various mixes of media. Charles, I think, hit on a really important point with really both of our backgrounds, where both of our backgrounds meet, and where ARGs become really powerful tools is with storytelling, and that everything has a story, and we can create a story around everything, including new employee orientation, that helps to engage and really create context to these environments and training environments. When we start defining an ARG, we really use that story as a foundation that engages the players, and for those that aren't familiar with ARGs, that initial engagement is usually through an anomaly in their regular schedule. So and that's often referred to as the rabbit hole, how you get started, how you get engaged in the game is through the rabbit hole. And then it's really a combination of those real world activities and a physical location and digital media on websites or through social media or even traditional media, through print or broadcast, social interaction with players, and then also, from a story perspective, non-player characters, characters that are really there for, to advance the gameplay, to advance the story, are a big part of the gameplay in an ARG as well. And ARGs can certainly be individual experiences, but that social element of it really lends itself to a deeper learning experience and really just a deeper immersive experience. And that social learning can be, as well, can be in the real world, face-to-face, or through digital means. Each one really is unique. Charles and I have designed an ARG that's a 5-minute ARG on disaster preparedness, and we have designed 3-day ARGs. And we've designed but not implemented yet longer term ARGs, and really our evolution in the world of ARGs is kind of going towards that perpetual ARG or that ongoing ARG that is always there, and the audience is kind of rotating in and out of that experience. So as you can imagine, with those different lengths of time, those experiences and the amount of media and the amount of different experiences, are very unique for each of those.
So, let's imagine a CEO was listening to this podcast, and she decided I'm sick of PowerPoint. I'm fed up with people doing these point and click things that nobody really pays attention to. I'm wasting all this money on training because nobody's really engaged. Nobody's really paying attention. I want to go forward with this. What's their next steps? If she were to go to the learning development department, is somebody in that department likely to know what she's talking about? If she says, I've heard this podcast, I know that now I want an alternate reality game, build one for me. Are they gonna, what's gonna happen in that department, do you expect?
Well, I expect the first thing is to start researching it. If someone is not completely unfamiliar with it. There are a number of books out there. Did I mention we wrote a book? they sort of walk you through the process and do it as an introduction. But actually for that CEO, the very first step is identify what the goals are. In order to use an ARC effectively, you have to understand who your audience is that you're presenting to, what the end goals that you want them to do, and what is success. Is success that every new employee completes this training in a particular time frame? Is success the number of errors within a particular form or within a particular process is greatly reduced? Success is going to mean something different for each instance of the ARG that you're looking at. And as Andy mentioned, no two ARGs are alike, and that's why. It's because they're very narrowly focused on getting results. An ARG can be a lot of different things. Cisco a couple years ago had a company build an ARG that was hundreds of thousands of dollars. It had high-end video, high production value, a whole number of actors and assets were involved in the creation of that ARG. But an ARG could also be on the very low end of using things like Twine or just using paper and pencil around the office and having fake posters or ways of sort of integrate someone to go to find pieces of a story and lead them to the process or the training that you want them to get to. So for that IT staff or those individuals wanting to implement one, the first steps are identifying the goal. The second might be looking at what skill sets and technologies do you have in-house that you could potentially use, looking for things out of house as well, but finding a tool set that's going to be able to facilitate both the story aspect of it, the activities that you want the players to undertake, and there was a third part of that. The learning, you know, just facilitate the learning overall. So it's a sort of like a content management system is a good way of approaching that.
And is there any particular sort of development area that ARGs are particularly good at?
Well, we've highlighted a number of those learning spaces in the book, including, new employee engagement, and I want to kind of broaden that to engagement and not just orientation, a focus on increasing teamwork and collaboration, optimizing training time. So if you have one of the examples in the book is a game for Constellation Wine Academy, and their efforts was kind of the game was built to culminate in a face-to-face training session where they would meet at almost like a training conference, and the ARG happened up to that training conference and during that training conference. So, instead of engaging people just for those 2 days and having them participate and practice and learn, people were really engaging, weeks up until that conference and came to the conference, much more prepared and with questions and with experiences to share. So that optimization of training time is something that, like many other options for training and development, ARGs can play a role in kind of optimizing that face-to-face time. Innovation is another really valuable way in which ARGs can be facilitated. And then certainly increasing skills, might be the kind of the primary goal of any training and development effort. So really, it's I think ARGs can kind of be used for almost anything, but certainly those event-based experiences where you have large groups of people gathering, and those instead of just funneling them into rooms and having them watch PowerPoint after PowerPoint, there's a lot of value that ARGs can play in really increasing the value of those events and increasing the impact of those events. But certainly there are other elements in other corporate or just business or product development initiatives that ARGs can play a role in.
No, really good. I mean, I think one of the things that we've found in our work as well is that a lot of traditional training isn't very participatory, actually, especially certain compliance training. So, here in London, the banking sector is quite big, and the regulator has very stringent sort of requirements about the things that people should be aware of, sort of legal issues, for example. And it's a very dry subject. And I think with this type of approach, the storytelling approach, you can create something that's much more participatory, much more engaging, and people get emotionally connected to the outcomes, and they actually see consequences of why they're learning this. So, for example, like money laundering, we're talking to somebody now about an experience that teaches people that money laundering actually funds terrorism. So while you've got somebody on the front line in a bank that's looking to, basically their bonus is based on whether they do a deal or not, they need to do the proper due diligence to find out where this money is coming from, because otherwise there's going to be consequences down the line. They might not see it immediately, and I think by creating this story world where people really have some like skin in the game, it really brings it home why they should be learning. And like you were saying, like the story is so important because it embeds in people's minds in a way that sort of just the dry facts don't. So I think we've probably, as an industry, and talking about like the training industry, it's barely, you know, it's barely sort of registered at this point in time, because I feel, and I don't know if you feel the same, that people tend to build to the tools. Like, everyone rushes to these sort of simple, these sort of like the regular products where you can just build point and click adventures or point and click sort of question and answer type things. And I know people who just get their secretary to sit there and fill it in. They just click through the thing. Oh, yeah, that's done. It goes into the LMS that someone took this course. And nobody really worries about performance. And in London, what we're finding is a lot of people are now switching more towards performance rather than just having, you know, demonstrating that you took the test. We actually need to see if you've changed behaviour or have actually done something different. And I think that's an area for ARG. So the book is definitely timely, and it's in some ways a little bit ahead of the time. So what sort of reaction have you had from companies that you've approached?
Well, a couple of things. One, and I just wanted to agree with your last statement, because we see these, if a trainer or if an individual is coming at a particular problem, they have their direction for solving it. And let's say we went as basic as just math. You know, if you were teaching someone about matrix math or volumes, let's say volume metric is a good example. I could sit there and show you the equation and tell you about this process. But if I generate an entire story about it, why we're looking at volume math or what the actual cause is. There's been a gas leak in the plant. The volume of the container was this amount. How far is it going to spread, and when do we need to evacuate, right? If I pose it as that really dire, stressful situation, your attention rises. Your engagement in solving the problem rises as well. So when I can lock you into just a training scenario, everyone knows it's fake, it's not real, but I'm really drawing out those emotions, and I think both you and Andy mentioned, you know, it isn't a very emotional, a great way of sort of driving the passion is pulling out the emotions and getting people interested. So engagement is a huge and large part of it. And then I would also say the other thing that I find one of the most rewarding is quite often we look at this scenario as trying to get to an end goal, but with particular players, we can often do things such as quiz them or check how well they're following the competencies of the organization, or, you know, you talked about the regulatory aspect of it, but we can do those things not in an overt manner, but just seeing how someone solves a problem through the story and then be able to assess them later. So I just want to give you a small example. We built this was for a VR rig, but the idea was having new employees learn how to navigate within this virtual environment that happened to be a facilities plant. There were serious regulations in place of what people should be able to do inside the environment. And by putting the headset on and giving someone a task, they were able to navigate to a particular location and perform some action there, which was great. But the other things we could do within this world is I could actually tell you, did you stay within the yellow lines, which are the safe zones, while you were navigating through that? Did you look at particular placards and wall signs that were up there for your safety? And, you know, you'll ask the employee after, yeah, did you see the sign? And they'll say yes. But I could actually go back and look and say, well, you looked at it for 0.3 seconds. That was not enough time to really gain it. So that's one of the things that I like about this platform is there's the overt, but then there's also the other things that we can test and sort of quantify around the situation as well.
I wonder if, you know, when we start talking about story, if the buyers within the organization actually kind of get it, if they sign up to that message, or if they think that it's a bit sort of airy-fairy and it doesn't sound like training at all.
Well, that's certainly a challenge, and Robert, you mentioned other challenges in you know, employee development and performance around, you know, regulations and really you know, leadership primarily being focused on checking the box that the training occurred, and that because of that learning occurred, and because of that performance will improve. And so there are challenges to overcoming kind of those biases or those understandings, and the you know, the one element of that is that unfortunately that's how a lot of us who are at the age to be in leadership in organizations learned. You know, we sat in a chair and people told us things, and we regurgitated those things on a test or a you know, a paper or you know, an essay exam, and that was learning. And that you know, that's not learning, especially it's not learning for performance, or it's not learning for long-term, cognitive gain or changes, where there is a change overall in organizational management and organizational performance, you know, beyond training and development activities and exercises, that focuses more on, you know, the need for engagement and immersiveness as an element of, you know, changing performance and changing behavior and learning new skills. And storytelling is becoming something that is making its way to the boardroom and not just the training room. So stories as an element of, you know, presentations. I mean, everyone, you know, you mentioned earlier, Robert, about everyone being very tool focused, and I think that is the case. That tends to be the case, again, really in all aspects of business and organization. You know, when you think about communications, you know, the first thing that people think about is, okay, well, where's PowerPoint and how many slides am I going to have, and someone, you know, when are you going to send me your slide deck and all that, and the, you know, PowerPoint has become the, you know, the reason that businesses aren't succeeding or that sales aren't closed or meetings aren't successful, when in fact it's really the design and the approach and the lack of story as a part of those presentations. You know, PowerPoint is an excellent tool. I mentioned the, you know, the 3-minute ARG or the 5-minute ARG on disaster preparedness that Charles and I did for a conference, and we've done it for webinars, and you know, we use PowerPoint for that and paper. So the tool set is really it's important, and there are certain elements to a tool set that can really lend to greater experiences and greater performance and greater analysis, but it really is all on the design. And that design thinking, I think, is making its way, is becoming a little bit more pervasive. And as that evolves and that changes, and as those in leadership or those that are trainers in organizations have come up through learning experiences that aren't so didactic and aren't so, rote and are more immersive and more engaging, I think these methods will become a little bit more commonplace. And there'll be an understanding that, yes, you can conduct the compliance training, by having someone stand at the front of the room for 2 hours and lecture off of PowerPoint slides, and you'll be able to check the box, but no one is going to know what to do when they leave that session, or when they're presented with a unique situation, when they're presented with a unique situation that they need to remain in compliance with or during, they're most likely going to fail. Because, you know, they haven't had any type of practice. And there's also, you know, winds of change in that arena as far as compliance training, that it is more than, just checking the box that the training occurred, and that there's value in, people actually being able to remain in compliance or follow the compliance guidelines and not just have attended the training. So lots of challenges there. It's definitely, you know, a process that's evolving or a method that's evolving really in all areas of business and in all areas of training and development as well.
I mean, you hit on something there about people going on a course and then not being able to apply it. there was actually a report done by Deloitte that said 75% of training spend is wasted because people don't know how to apply what they've learned. And so, like, there are no productivity gains. And what's good about these types of experiences is the rehearsal that people get to, try these things out. And you mentioned about disaster recovery, you know, for certain situations that thankfully don't occur very frequently, the idea of being able to sort of role play that and go through one of these types of experiences is very, very beneficial, because, the first time someone experiences a crisis isn't for real. It's in a simulated environment, and that means they're much more prepared, things look more familiar to them. So just on that basis, it's quite... you can already see the benefits there, I would have thought, straight off.
And very different from, for those that aren't familiar with alternate reality games or games or transmedia experience is, you know, very different than doing a role playing in a classroom environment where you stand up for 5 minutes and kind of stare at the person, you know, across from you and try to follow this very, you know, unstructured and very unorthodox, you know, scenario that the instructors put together and trying to jam into this, you know, around all of this information. So, yeah, very, very different than kind of traditional scenarios in training.
Definitely. Is there, I mean, is there any kind of, like on the learner's side, the trainees, do they need any kind of special briefing, do you think, before they take part in these games? Like if they're, let's say they're not, you know, they're not familiar with these, for example, and they're used to just having a PowerPoint. Someone says, you're going to go on this training, and all of a sudden they get a phone call from a, you know, a non-player character, or they get a text message or something, they might be caught off guard. Do you, how do you prepare people for this new kind of training?
Actually, that's a really great point. In most cases, we've tried to hide the fact that the training is taking place. But as you mentioned, there are some people who are completely taken back or not sure about the content or what's happening, and they might investigate or they might just you know, delete the text message or not answer the email. And quite often, we've discussed the idea of having multiple ways of engagement for employees. So if you think about that tweet or that text message or something coming through in an email, it might also be the employee in the cubicle next to you who might trip off the process. Or a meeting might be arranged that shows up on your schedule and you go to that room and no one else is there. But by being in that room, you realize, oh, there's a message on the whiteboard, and let me follow that message. So it would definitely behoove the organization to come up with not just one rabbit hole event, but think of a number of ways that you can get engagement. And then if people, you know, want to opt out and not do it, you should be prepared to provide other training materials for doing this, because it might not be for everyone. You know, I think the large majority of people would appreciate this sort of role and approach, but sometimes you have individuals that might be seeking other types of training or not introductory, or they're looking for something more robust and they might be a little hesitant. But I will say that if you've created a culture of this at the organization, you're going to see that everyone sort of wants to come in and be part of this, and it becomes water cooler conversations that take place. It's like, hey, you know, did you see the woman in the red dress? You know, what was I supposed to do at that point in the game? You know, that sort of thing could happen in those situations. So multiple ways of having people engage into the world is always a great thing.
No, exactly. I agree. I mean, that idea about the a different culture, you know, what does training and learning mean in your, you know, in your company right now? Because maybe for a lot of people, it's a pain in the backside that they, you know, they don't want to leave their desk. They don't want to have to spend 3 days you know, stuck in a room somewhere. And here we've got a new opportunity to actually keep people productive and engaged in a continuous learning and development in the world around them, on their commute or at some other time. And imagine if you're responsible for learning and development and people actually, you know, go over to their colleagues and say, you've totally got to get involved in this. You know, that will be quite a big difference, I imagine, to how it is in lots of companies today.
Yeah, definitely. You'll be able to have, again, it's a cultural thing, and if you want to be part of that culture and you want to sort of have the sort of the inside story with your colleagues, build a culture, build a society, a community within your company, this is a great way of doing it as well.
Absolutely.
Organizations definitely train their employees on what to expect from training. So, you know, you can impact that certainly if there's a established way of doing things. You know, it's going to be a little bit more difficult and there'll be more transition time, but you know, you can establish what expectations should be based on your own goals and your own initiatives in your organization versus having to accept the culture that's been established. And oftentimes that culture is established because there's no other way that's known. So when you can introduce a new method and you can introduce it to the right audience at the right time, you know, that can have an impact on changing that culture and setting new expectations for people.
No, very good. And actually, we were talking to one company that was basically different parts of the organization were coming together. So there's a lot of basically it was a change management exercise. There's going to be a lot of upheaval, people having to relocate from different parts of the country, and so they were looking at creating some sort of alternate reality game for team building, really, so that people could connect across geographic, you know, boundaries. They didn't have to be in the same room, so that they would get to know and get to appreciate other parts of the organization before they came together. So I think what we've indicated there, that for cultural things, it could be another good opportunity to think about an ARG.
Yeah, I was just thinking, as you were describing, one of the examples, you were talking earlier about financial organizations and money laundering. You know, it would be very interesting to have an individual or a group of individuals go through some training or go through a scenario, and a couple days later you have someone come in as an officer and arrest someone. You know, it's sort of because that becomes learning, then, not for just that individual, but for the entire room. You know, everyone who sees that, it's sort of fake arrests, fake cop comes in and sort of, okay, you're arrested on these grounds. And then everyone can now turn that into a learning experience, right? Now everyone can talk about, well, what were the steps that led to this? And why is it so important that employee needed to do their due diligence on the other end of during their training in order to not have this happen? Because quite often it's the small steps that you make months and it's the small steps that you miss in the process that could have other detrimental results on the other end. You know, financial money laundering is one. Andy and I worked on a project for a health insurer that was really just about getting individuals to be more healthier, making healthier choices in their 20s and 30s, so that the health insurer could save millions of dollars when those individuals got to their 50s and 60s.
No, it's really, I think, we didn't even touch on healthcare and the benefits there could be for that. I mean, if you look at an application like Zombies Run, for example, that's right. A story world there, motivating millions of people to go jogging effectively who might previously have preferred to read comic books. I mean, you know, it's quite an interesting, you know, it's a concrete example of the application of storytelling to affect behavioral change.
Yeah, and look at the format. You know, old radio, you know, mid-50s television or radio broadcast is essentially the format that we're getting. So we're taking something that's, you know, 60 years old and using that as a medium today for people and alerting them to this way of this brand of storytelling. Nothing new. The only new part about it is the delivery mode.
Yeah, and the application of it to a particular problem. Totally. So, when someone contacts you guys and says, "I want to, you know, I've listened to this, it sounds pretty good, I want to take things forward," what sort of information do you ask from them first? Like, what's important for you to know when you pick up the phone about how you're going to, you know, help them and develop an ARG for what they need?
Charles hit on the primary, you know, focus early on in talking about the goal and what they want to achieve, and certainly as a part of that, you know, how are they going to measure whether they've achieved that goal or not? And then probably the second most important aspect is the audience and, you know, what their profile is. And this is something that's kind of a standard element of analyzing training situations, and often the audience analysis, you know, stops at age and education and gender. And with an alternate reality game or something that involves storytelling or immersive experiences, you know, we really try to get a better sense of the audience's true nature and things that they're passionate about, company events that have been successful, types of things that are talked about in the office, to try to find a common area where people can, something that people can come together on as a potential theme for the alternate reality game or as a potential story. So that audience analysis, is a really important, piece of determining what the ARG experience, you know, how the ARG experience will be designed or how it might roll out. And then certainly, you know, the physical environment is also an important part of that analysis. You know, what is either, you know, available or constrictive in the physical environment that would that should be considered, because certainly, you know, the rooms and the hallways and the, you know, the spaces in the area where, you know, people are gathering and people are participating in the game or engaging in the game, you know, can have a big impact. And certainly, you know, we try to incorporate the physical space of the environment as much as possible in these games. It's, you know, the physical element or the spatial element involves, you know, create some level of physicality, so people are up and around and moving, which is a great experience for them and a great environment for learning and for engagement and for that social interaction as well, getting people away from the individual digital experience and making sure that it is, you know, it's social in the real world, and so those physical spaces are important as well. You know, those would be the primary elements, and then it's more of a somewhat traditional design and production perspective, at least from the steps that are involved in trying to determine, you know, specific, you know, skills and objectives that are a part of achieving that overall goal, and then kind of breaking those down and aligning those to, you know, specific story arcs and points, as well as, you know, activities. And one of the things that, you know, we wrote about in the book that I think is really helps to kind of frame the types of experiences that that you can have in an ARG and can potentially help people design their own alternate reality game is the you know, the different levels of experience, and we define in more detail, you know, what those are and give examples. But, you know, these activities can be, they can be passive, they can be active, or they can be immersive. So, you know, no one experience, even a roller coaster, has times where you're on a flat surface and you're moving slowly. So, you know, these experiences aren't just this complete whirlwind of, you know, immersive activity and learning. Sometimes you're passively reading or listening as well as a part of the mixed media experience and the mixed, you know, activity level experience.
Very good. Very good. So, guys, I'm going to start to wrap up the podcast. Is there anything that we've not covered that you think would be valuable to mention now at the end?
Well, I think just to take Andy's one step further, you know, the ghost side of it is, you know, the next question would be, what's the budget? And not to say that we're limiting the work to be done, but more of a matter of identifying. You know, budget helps also define what type of experience you're going to be creating. Is it lots of additional media, or are there small tactical things that could be done? Again, utilizing the physical space, utilizing some of the tools that are already available to the company themselves. You know, those are all part of the equation as well.
Yeah, actually, on the budget, I often see companies spending, you know, it looks like quite a lot of money on quite elaborate videos, and I wonder if some of that budget should be shifted away from, you know, these glossy sort of Hollywood production style videos onto other areas like the transmedia components that could be much more effective because they're delivered, you know, in a different way.
I completely agree. You know, there's you could get cell phone video in some cases could tell a better story than the amount of money that people are spending on sort of these large productions or sets and scales and things. And throwing that money back into a variety of different areas definitely makes sense. So it is part of the equation to consider, but also this idea that it doesn't all have to be this great glitz, you know, this 5-minute intro when, oh my God, I just printed out a piece of paper out of my printer and stuck it up on the wall, and I got the exact same response.
Yeah, so there you go. And, you know, actually thinking about that, there's so in like scenario planning, so often companies will try to look into the future and they'll, you know, choose a couple of axes, and there could be four potential, you know, future scenarios that the organization finds itself in. So these often take, you know, cost quite a lot of money to put the, to bring in the experts to, you know, look through, you know, a looking glass to see what these four different future sort of scenarios might be. And then it gets put into a report that gets, you know, disseminated to the organization. And how many people do you imagine actually reads that that scenario report to the point where they can actually think differently about what the job they're doing today and recognize those things. So imagine creating an alternate reality game where we could put people into those future scenarios so that people actually got to feel and act as though they were in that future world and see the consequences of what they do today completely, you know. And that's just saying you've spent all this money or you plan to spend all this money on the scenario planning, but if nobody reads it, what benefit is it then to the organization? So part of the budget for that exercise should be actually how are we going to get people to understand what these scenarios mean to them in their workplace today. So yeah, exactly, it's the same sort of approach really. So guys, how can people find you online? Where would they what URL should they remember?
Well, I'll start off. I can be followed or I can be found mostly on Twitter at Charles Palmer. It's a great way of keeping in touch with us. We also have a website for the book as well, where we have some of the scenarios from the book, some tools, case studies that we found, even post-writing of the book. There are always updates and things that we will be making through that, and that's available at gamificationforperformance.com.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And, yeah, I hope everybody rushes out and gets the book.
We do too. Thanks, Robert.
Take care. See you now. Bye.